Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. This time last year, as we all waited for the FedNow network to launch, banks and credit unions were focused on understanding the opportunities around instant payments and how to prepare to offer them. A year later, it's time for financial institutions to move forward or get left behind. Joining me today to delve further into this is Debbie Smart, Chief Product Marketer at Q2, Keith Gray, Vice President of Strategic Partnerships at The Clearinghouse, and Elisa Tavilla, Director of Debit at Javelin Strategy and Research. From emerging use cases to the strategic decisioning of starting with receive-only capabilities, they're going to dive into the latest developments shaping the future of instant payments. It's great to have you all with us today. To start things off, Keith, what are you seeing in the market regarding use cases that are being implemented, discussed, and explored?
So since we launched RTP 6+ years ago now, you know, we've always known from the beginning that there would be a wide variety of different use cases. And that depends on, you know, the product offerings of the banks and their technology providers and what their product strategy is. At this point with RTP, we've got almost 500 different FIs on the network. By definition, 90% of those are small banks and credit unions. And all of them have a wide variety of what they're doing with RTP, a host of different use cases. Right now, we cover about 67% of the U.S. account base, which means if you're a company like Square or Venmo, you can reach 67% of your customer base or more typically, depending on where you're located. Both coasts tend to have a little bit of a higher penetration rate than the middle of the country. And it just it just depends on the demographics and the breakup of the banks and where they are with RTP. From the beginning, some of the use cases that have driven a lot of volume from day one are account-to-account type of payments. That could be me sending money to my son directly, or it could be me sending money to me from my bank account to my brokerage account or vice versa. So that has always been a very high volume use case, and it continues to grow at a rapid rate now. We do a lot of P2P type of volume. I think Zelle and other P2P providers like Chuck recently launched on the RTP network. We see a lot of business to consumer type of payments, and think companies like Square and Daily Pay for payroll and things like that are big users of the RTP network. Surprisingly, one of the applications that has become huge on the network that we didn't really project was payroll and daily payroll and what's called earned wage access. So they are big users of the RTP network, and that continues to grow at a really fast rate. Who would have thought that 6 years ago when we launched this, that a lot of people would prefer getting paid every day for what they do? And then you've got all of the rideshare companies and the companies like Grubhub that are using our RTP to push money out to their contractors is a good example. Another fast growing use case, the dollar volume is way higher, but the transaction volume is lower, is business to business. And I think this year you're going to see a lot of new product offerings around business to business. What Q2 is doing is a great example. Deb, I'll just defer to you to talk a little bit about what you guys are doing in the business to business space with Q2.
Hey, great. Thanks, Keith. Yeah, so if you think about the impact of instant payments, you typically think about the immediacy of the payment. But on the commercial side, and especially with B2B payments, the biggest value is really in the data from the rich messaging that is allowed for on the new payment rails that doesn't exist in other payment rails. And as commercial customers are learning more about this, they're getting really excited. Part of the reason they're getting so excited is a third of all B2B payments are still made using a check. So 33%, right? That's a lot. And pre-COVID, that number was 42%. During COVID, when people moved more to electronic transactions because they couldn't go into the office to sign checks, we did see a move from check to ACH. But 78% of the time, when a business pays another business via ACH, the addenda information or the remittance information doesn't go along with the transaction. It actually goes in an email or US mail. So that becomes really time consuming for these businesses to do reconciliation. So part of the excitement around the power in instant payments is to be able to have that remittance information start with a request for pay from the biller, allow for any information to be exchanged with the request for information from the payer, and have all of that stay with the transaction throughout the flow. So what we're seeing is a heightened interest with commercial customers, again, as they're learning more about this opportunity, and also with FIs that are currently supporting all of those message types. And so to Keith's point, we think as more availability for being able to create and manage these messages and payments is out in the market, we're going to see some nice growth in this area.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm seeing the same thing as both of you, Keith and Debbie. Earned wage access is one of the top instant payment use cases. I think there are a number of other use cases that are being explored and certainly being used and offered already, particularly in payments that traditionally have been bound to business operation hours, such as in the auto industry. Most consumers tend to shop for cars after work or on weekends where the banks were closed. So with real-time payments, the 24/7, 365 that enables more convenience and better business processes. Similarly with real estate, there's also been a lot of interest in the retail merchant space using instant payment for point of sale, e-commerce transactions. You mentioned the request for payment. Certainly that can be used in pay by bank use cases at the point of sale, which would be more convenient, especially with micro deposits and real-time payments to validate accounts and offer better customer experiences than ACH. So with the growth of RTP, very exciting, the stats that you mentioned, Keith, and also the continued growth of FedNow, would be very exciting to see what new use cases are executed this year.
Yeah, and back to what Deb was talking about the information and the data that can flow with the payment, that really facilitates straight through processing for companies where nobody has to touch the payment in the middle of it to make something work like they do now. Another thing is it's not so much about the immediacy of it, but the perfect timing of the payment is critical in a business-to-business type of an environment, especially in a higher interest rate environment that we're in now, where there's value in, okay, I owe a supplier $1 million tonight at midnight. I'm going to keep that in my account to 11:59 and 45 seconds, and then I'll shoot it out then, and I'll get a confirmation back, and everything will be closed and settled literally within seconds. And I think as much as the immediacy in some use cases, that perfect timing and visibility of a immediate payment is a key part of the value proposition of an instant payment as well.
You're spot on, Keith. I think the precision and the control that the customer, whether it's a business or an individual, has over the real-time payment offers is extremely valuable and is a extremely good value proposition for real-time payments.
I'm sure that many listeners tuning in have many questions regarding where to begin. Debbie, do you advise starting with receive-only capabilities?
So that's a great question. So many FIs feel like they are not ready to support sending instant payments. And this could be for a number of reasons, right? They may be still figuring out their strategy, what use cases they plan to support. They may not yet have software products needed to enable the creation or origination of these payments, because as Keith pointed out, this is something that's still happening in the market, right? Solutions being put out there by vendors. And so as they're trying to figure that out, starting with receive only does a couple of things for them. It allows them to get connected to the networks and get the plumbing in place, so to speak, for connecting to the new rails. And the biggest benefit is absolutely what they can bring to their account holders by receiving instant payments. And I'll give you an example. We've got a customer, a $9 billion credit union, who decided to start with receive only in January of 2021. The first month they had 3,400 incoming transactions post to member accounts. By December 2023, that number was almost 38,000. So they've had huge, huge growth in incoming payments. And they didn't ever promote it or announce that it was available. They just enabled it. And what's even more interesting to me is the fact that the day they went live, the first payment hit within an hour, within 60 minutes of sending the payment. It was a Venmo payment. So somebody moving money from Venmo to their bank account. So that's a huge opportunity, right? To be able to bring value to account holders, even if FIs are not ready to send. And it's starting to be a concern for FIs who are not yet receiving these payments as consumers become more and more aware of what's out there. So I'll give you an example. Grubhub, if I'm a Grubhub driver, I can open the Grubhub app and there's actually a message in the app that says, would you like to be paid immediately? But your bank doesn't support it? Well, click here for a list of banks that do. So consumers are becoming more and more aware. And if financial institutions are doing receive only, they can keep those consumers happy. On those volumes I gave, the lion's share of those payments are account to account transfers, moving money from Venmo to my bank account, and also the payroll earned wage access that we talked about previously, those instant payroll type transactions.
Keith, what are you seeing on your end?
Yeah, so absolutely the path to receive is typically a very light lift for the financial institution. And most of their technology providers, whether it's their core provider or mobile banking online provider like Q2 or other payment hub provider, they offer receive and can turn that on very quickly. And like Deb said, you don't have to do anything. Payments start flowing in immediately. So you, like Deb said, if you're a customer, who's going to say, no, I don't want to get paid faster, smarter, and better, right? It's just a no-brainer. So you can provide a service your customers want, and you can create a new deposit channel into the bank or credit union, and you don't have to make a big investment to do that. And while you're receiving payments and adding value to your customers, driving new deposits, you can figure out what your strategy is on the send side of the equation. Like working with a company like Q2 for a business-to-business use case or offering a real-time bill payment type of use case. So that's where a lot of the smaller FIs are at now. And a lot of the tech companies this year will be launching a wide variety of use cases that leverage RTP or FedNow in different ways. So I think you're going to see that send volume really keep ramping up because of increased coverage, but also new products and new use cases that are getting launched into the industry.
I think starting with receive only is a good first step to take, especially for financial institutions to adjust their operations to accommodate a real-time gross settlement system that's always on 24/7, 365. But I think eventually being able to support both send and receive capabilities will add more value and enable the financial institutions to take advantage of all the capabilities that RTP and FedNow have to offer. I know we mentioned request for pay briefly just a while ago. And for example, you have to be able to receive and send in order to receive RFPs because you can receive the request for payment, but if you can't send, then you wouldn't be able to respond to it and push the payments out, given that RTP and FedNow transactions are push only or credit push payment. I guess an analogy that I often like to give is unrelated to financial services, but in general, like a phone, you can have a phone and you can receive calls, but if that's the only thing you can do and you can't make outgoing calls, then can't really take advantage of the technology and it's just a one-way system. Whereas if you have a two-way system, then there are certainly many more possibilities and value that you can take advantage of with the network.
You've all acknowledged the importance of starting with receive only. Taking it a step further, is it necessary to establish connectivity with both networks? Keith, what are your thoughts?
I was talking to a banker recently, a small community banker, and FedNow was getting ready to launch. And he was concerned, confused as to what their strategy should be regarding FedNow. They were already on RTP. And he said, it just kind of makes things complicated. And I was like, well, that seems to be the way we do things here in the U.S., right? We have a lot of banks with a lot of different strategies. We've always had multiple payment networks across all of our payroll types, our payment types, I should say. We run an ACH network. The Fed has FedACH. We run a wire network. They have FedWire, right? We're used to having multiple choices. There's a number of different debit networks, as an example. So there's been a lot of concern in the industry since FedNow launched. Okay, now we've got two. How do we deal with it? And my point is, you know, we're kind of used to it. You know, we'll figure it out. In the meantime, from, I think, the best strategy and what we're seeing from banks that are joining FedNow, most of them, I think 60 or 70% of the banks that are on FedNow are on RTP or getting on RTP as well. All of the technology providers that I deal with, the big guys and the smaller guys, work with both. If you look at the Fed list of technology providers, it's our list as well. So you have multiple choices as an FI. From a coverage standpoint, I believe the best solution is join both. Technology providers that you work with every day can make that easy for you. And then you future-proof your strategy moving forward, and you can just see how things shake out with the deployment of FedNow versus RTP. In the short term, all of the volume, for the most part, is on RTP. So in the short term, you want to receive payments. That's all on RTP. If you want to future-proof your decisions and your strategy, get on both, and that way you're covered both ways. And from a technology standpoint, you have choices for both. So it could be very, it should be a very straightforward process.
Keith had mentioned it's really important to be on both networks. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, absolutely. What I'm hearing from many financial institutions is that, again, to Keith's point, they're trying to figure out what they should do, what their strategy should be. But a simple analogy for me is, if I want to send you money and my bank is only on FedNow and your bank is only on the RTP network, I can't send you money. That alone should be a reason, supporting account holders and really working towards ubiquity, to be on both networks. And to Keith's point, you know, there's the short-term strategy and the long-term strategy. And down the road, it's very possible that the networks will become interoperable like they are on other payment rails. But the fact that the gateway providers or the connectivity partners all support being able to connect to both networks definitely makes it easier for financial institutions. But the bottom line is really, what am I doing for my account holders in order to enable them to move money the way they want to be able to move money?
Yeah. And when you get right down to it, whether it's RTP or an ACH or a wire, a bank's customers, whether they're business or consumers, they could care less. Is it our ACH network? Is it the Fed ACH network? Is it RTP? Is it FedNow? They want to get paid faster, better, and smarter. And it's up to us in the industry to make that as seamless as possible for the consumers and their and businesses. And I think we have some ways to go to figure out exactly how that's going to work. But in the meantime, we have two great network solutions, and it's up to the individual FI to figure out how they want to deal with those.
As we're coming to an end, you know, what are the considerations when deciding how to connect to the network, such as choosing a gateway provider, connectivity partners, you both had mentioned? I'll make this a lightning round, and Deb, I'll start with you first.
Okay, great. So financial institutions do have the ability, if they want, to connect directly to the networks, but what most of them are doing is choosing a connectivity partner, gateway provider, third party service provider. They're known by different names to make that easier for a number of reasons, right? Financial institutions have back office processes today that happen on other payment rails like wire and ACH, and many of them have a back office component that supports them. When they're looking at how they want to connect to the networks, I think there are a few things they need to think about. Timing, when they want to be live and connected to the network, functionality that's available, and cost. So for example, do I have use cases as a financial institution where I need to support requests for pay and requests for information? And then if so, are the providers I'm looking at offering that capability? And if not, when is it on their roadmap? You know, when is that falling in line? Now, the cores typically all have payment hubs or payment capabilities. And so for financial institutions to look at what their core is doing is great. And then there are a lot of non-core options as well. So they looking at multiple providers, comparing what it's going to cost me, well, again, what messages are supported and other functionality that is available, And then if they're not currently supporting all those messages and or not connected to both networks, what is the timing for that?
Thank you, Deb. Keith, how about you? What are some considerations that should be top of mind?
Yeah, and both for RTP and FedNow, the beauty is you have, like Deb said, a lot of choices. You also have a lot of flexibility. You're not limited to just one technology provider. We have FIs that use their core provider to receive payments, but they might be using a mobile or an online provider like Q2 to originate, or a bill pay provider, you know, that leverages RTP. So you're not limited to the number of technology providers you can use. And whenever I talk to a bank or a credit union and just have them talk to me about the providers they use now, typically there's two or three that already offer RTP. They just have to decide which vendor that they already use do they want to add the RTP and FedNow offerings to. So the beauty is a lot of options and a lot of flexibility. And that's how we designed RTP, and I know that's how FedNow planned to offer when they launch FedNow as well.
Thank you. And last but not least, Elisa, you cover this space a lot. What are some things that you're seeing on your end?
Sure. I agree with everything that Keith and Debbie mentioned, all valid points, and certainly very important when deciding which partners to choose and to work with. I'd say overall, when financial institutions are considering implementing real-time payments, whether it's deciding which networks to join, if you want to be send and receive only, which use cases to consider, I would say look at your own customer base and their financial needs and pain points. Think about how real-time payments can help solve them or improve the customer experience and how it complements the other payment methods that your financial institution currently supports. And those are certainly key factors to consider, and it will help you decide which partners to work with.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights and perspective, and thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes, and don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.